Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Robbie and Rex Road presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Check out their new luxury listing at 6551 Brownlee at TJAndersonHomes.com. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. We'll have Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach, coming up at 7:30. And Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com from 8 to 9 o'clock today. Joining us in studio, so looking forward to that. Joe, we've talked a lot about the Titans and their offensive line and what that looked like on Sunday so far this week. That's often been in discussion in tandem with Ryan Tannehill and his performance. I thought especially early in the game, the Titans' offensive line wasn't very good, and they were allowing pressure, allowing the quarterback to get hit. Ryan Tannehill got hit 10 times on Sunday in the game. But there are metrics out there, Joe, that suggests that maybe the Titans' offensive line looked a little bit better than we thought on Sunday.
Well, most things, you know, suggest that in terms of analytics. So our buddy Zach, who had some – Zach, by the way, on Choice is Yours, he was number two with the Greek omelet, but he had this omelet. Let me just read his omelet real quick. Cheddar and Swiss cheese, Cajun shrimp, jalapenos, tasso ham, which I don't even know what that is, onions, and mushrooms. That's pretty strong.
You lost me on the mushrooms, but yeah.
Ah, oh, dude, got to have the mushrooms. So here's he had a tweet about the Titans' OL week one performance and compared to the NFL. Okay, NFL average sacks allowed 1.4, Titans allowed 2. QB hits allowed, NFL average 2.1, Titans allowed 3. Hurries allowed, NFL average 7.8, Titans allowed 7. Pressures allowed, NFL average 11.4, Titans allowed 12. And then pass blocking snaps, they had 40. The NFL average was 38.75, which is all, you know, sounds pretty good. Like the pass rush win rate, okay? So I rip Pro Football Focus a fair amount.
You do.
Okay. In part because, especially with the instant grades, I find ridiculous, especially instant grades on. Well, I mean, especially offensive line. But, you know, ESPN has the pass block win rate, too. The numbers are pretty good. The numbers are an average offensive line numbers, okay? And we did talk about this. Early in the game, it was bad. I don't care what you say to me. It was bad, and I think that probably affected Tannehill some.
Yep.
You want him to not be affected, but they were getting – they were getting beat badly. It did get better. It got better. But this is, I will say, and this is where I think I may have been a little bit dismissive, because OT pass block win rate rankings, okay? And this is actually a tweet I saw from Justin Graver. Chris Hubbard.
Yeah.
23 plays, 23 wins, okay?
Yeah. 100%. Which I believe, if I saw that list correctly, puts him at number one in the league.
Well, yeah, it's 100%. Well,
I mean, but like, I don't think anybody else was there with him.
Yeah,
like, people who qualified.
Penei Sewell was.
Okay.
Actually, Conklin was too, but he only had 11 plays. And then it really sucks to see Jack Conklin, by the way, out with another ACL and MCL. I mean, it's that might be career ending for Jack, which really sucks. But I will say this: what did I say Monday? Yeah, well, Cam Jordan. Yeah, kind of lost it. And that's my instinct. Is like, didn't see much from Cam Jordan, so, boy, Cam Jordan's just not very good now. What if he's pretty good? And what if Chris Hubbard's good? I mean, I don't know that it's not the case.
I told you my called shot before the year. It was actually George Fant. What's going to be the starting right tackle when Nicholas Petitfrere came back? Maybe I'll switch it to Chris Hubbard.
Now you can just switch it.
Yeah.
You can switch out. But look, I got to say, if you do your job, whoever it is, I mean, Cam Jordan's not like a total tomato can anymore, is he?
I don't think so.
I didn't see him a lot Sunday. So
we feeling good.
He did a good job. Well, I think that was surprising, because I go back to last week, I thought that would be the more problematic thing, would be, you know, that's the side that Cam Jordan lines up on, and that Chris Hubbard, I haven't been especially impressed with him, you know, in pass blocking, but it also hasn't been like outrageously bad. It's a good day for him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you take this along with the run blocking, which I thought there was a lot to like about that, especially after going back and watching it again. Again, it's kind of like, you know, it's not total disaster city here with the offensive line. I mean, this game, you keep coming back to, like, ultimately, like, they had a lot of things in place. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It's not going to be a great offensive line. And I think over time, they're going to be probably a little bit sub-average, would be my guess, in all these numbers. Maybe I'm wrong. But Sunday comes down to your quarterback. I'm sorry. See, like, he's missing these throws. It's not hard. It's not hard to analyze this.
And this is what I we've had some discussion about this week. The one thing I've kept coming back to in this, you know, Derek Carr was under duress too, right? Like, the Titans offensive line, or excuse me, the Titans defensive front did a really good job,
all
especially in the first half, being all over him. And yet, Derek Carr hung in there and made some good throws. And for the most part, when receivers were open, he hit them. Now, he did have an atrocious interception to Amani Hooker, which I don't know why he threw that ball, but he did. But that play aside, Derek Carr, I thought, was pretty good on Sunday. So, look, some of it is, like, your quarterback, even if things aren't perfect around him, you got to be able to hang in there, make some throws, and do it accurately. And that's what's so weird about Tannehill's performance, because he's usually done that. And Sunday, he just didn't. And I don't know what that means moving forward.
We talked earlier about the play, like the play that, you know, that sealed the gate. It's Rashid Shaheed, who's a really nice player, by the way. He's going to be, well, okay. It's a layup. Derek Carr made the layup. Tannehill had those too. He didn't make his, you know, and you expect both of them to do that.
Yep.
I mean, it's a problem for the Titans that Derek Carr had a layup on that play, because that was third and long. You know, the Titans plays that Tim Kelly dialed up were, I want to say, I have to go back, I think they were both first downs, I think. You know, third and long, everybody knows what you have to do. But look, he was wide open. Carr laid it in there, you know. And if your quarterback doesn't do that in this league, come on. This is not – it doesn't go much deeper than that.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Jason in Hendersonville. Jason, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I've called in a many a time and said, hey, we can win a Super Bowl with Tannehill, but not because of Tannehill. But after that game, watching the velocity on his balls, you correct me if I'm wrong. This is the reason why I'm asking. Did you notice a big difference? And if so, could the injuries be catching up with him? I do realize one of the throws, his arm was hit. But, I mean, a lot of these underthrows and in the accuracy issues he's starting to develop, to me, it looks as if he may have lost something, and it may be a little too much for him to carry on, you know, in the future. So what do you think, over the years that we've all watched him play here since, 2019, it just doesn't look the same. I remember when Peyton Manning's balls started to flutter and he didn't have the strength to, you know, to push the ball down the field. So what do you guys think? Is it just the offensive line and the pressure getting to him where his velocity is wrong, or do you think it's injury and just age and injury catching up with him? Thanks,
yep.
Guys.
Thanks for the call, Jason. Appreciate it. We've talked about that a little bit this week, Joe. To me, that's worst-case scenario for the Titans, is if this is not just a one-week thing where he's missing guys and that he's starting to deteriorate as a player. That's worst-case scenario. And I'm not willing, I don't think, to make that judgment after 1 week. Now, I will say, he underthrew the ball to Chris Moore going down the field there. I watched some of the throws that he made. And a couple things stood out to me. Some of them didn't feel like they had the same zip on them, to Jason's point. And it did feel like also, Joe, and they were talking about this on the CBS broadcast, that it was basically just like one read and go for Tannehill, and that he was staring people down the whole day too, which that's going to lead to some turnovers if you do that.
Well, that's – and not going boom, boom, boom through the progressions is – that to me is – that's a happy feet symptom. That's a worried about your protection symptom. But look, to the caller's point, yeah, look, I think it's – I mean, someone earlier asked on the text line about Tannehill, like, why don't we see him running? Wait, where's the athleticism? Where's the – you know. The thing is, I didn't think in August his passes looked especially fluttery or anything like that. Here, this is a great – I mean, analytics world – how about some MPH on Tannehill's throws? How about some MPH on Tannehill's throws compared to last year? Yeah. I did think a few times, man, that one just looks a little weak.
Yeah.
But can also look weak if you're late and you're thrown into double coverage. It's decision-based.
That's why I'm not willing to make that after 1 week, that conclusion.
I mean, I don't think that's a huge thing here. I think that would have been noticeable. There is a difference if, like, Levis and Willis ripping one compared to Tannehill, but I think that was the case anyway, you know? And no, not saying that either of those guys should take his job. I'm just saying they do have a little bit stronger arms.
Headline: Malik Willis should start on Sunday, according to Joe Rexroad, and Joey Bosa might as well just take a day off because Chris Hubbard's got him covered up on Sunday.
Exactly. And Tannehill, emergency QB3.
That's right. 615-737-1025. We'll continue the discussion on the Titans, the offensive line. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to on the text line. We'll do that as well. Make sure you tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits this Saturday for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will kick off at 6 o'clock at home against Murray State. Pre-game beginning at 5 o'clock. You can hear all the coverage on 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Sign up for Silly Underdog Picks today for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can make your picks at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app as week 2 of NFL football kicks off this weekend. Some college football action as well. Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 102.5 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Discussing the Titans offensive line. Joe, one thing that I also, after watching the game on Sunday, have come to appreciate, there were a couple of times where Dillard and Skoronski together kind of struggled handling stunts.
Yeah, there was one in particular.
Yeah.
That Skoronski's got to do a better job.
But really, for the most part, I feel pretty good about him. Like, Skoronski, I think, is going to be a really good player for a long time.
No, he was annihilating people out there. Yeah, he's good. And, this is like, we'll see. We'll see. I think, obviously, ideally, you keep things the same and they keep getting better and better together and they gel and this becomes a good offensive line and everybody stays in their spots. And I guess we can talk about a battle between Petit, Frere, and Hubbard. I mean, I don't know. But Skoronski, you could make the case. Would you like to? I would have liked to just see Skoronski. I would have liked to see Skoronski at left tackle, just to see it, see what it's like.
Yeah.
I'm personally just not a, the arm length thing. I mean, there are exceptions to that. I think he could be really good. I mean, if you're him, you make a whole lot more money the duration of your career if you play that spot. But ideally for the Titans, it doesn't come to that. He stays where he is, and the whole thing gets better and better.
I got a text that says, the offensive line did seem fine outside of Hubbard, which we've just talked about. It's been really good.
The analytics say you're wrong. No, I mean, I didn't see a lot of significant individual issues with him.
No.
The numbers say
he was really good.
Okay.
Same texture also says, to me, it seemed the bigger issue was the receivers getting separation. Which,
don't get me trolled on Twitter because Treylon Burks got open 3 times.
DeAndre Hopkins, we talked about this heading into the year. Like, he's going to create some separation at times because of his route running ability and how good he is at it. But, Hopkins is not a guy that really throughout the course of his career has been, stricken wide open down the field all that much. He's a great combat catcher. I mean, there were even a couple times, as bad as the Titans offense was at times on Sunday, he made 2 or 3 catches on Sunday with somebody draped right over the top of him. Like, he's really good at catching the ball in tight spaces. So, I mean, that's going to be what it is for Hopkins, I think, as they move forward. Like, very rarely is it going to be him standing in the middle of the field waving his arms wide open for Tannehill to hit him.
No, but he is also a great route runner. And
he is.
Still, I think he'll get more when he's manned up by somebody. I think he'll have more success getting some separation against a lot of other people than against Marshon Lattimore.
Who's very good.
So there's that too. But look, there were times Tannehill locked in on him, threw to him when he should have thrown to someone else, and then threw late to him. And sometimes it's like locking in and late. Whereas if you go through your progressions, again, very easy to say from here, then there's a better option. But I do think the clock was sped up on him. And that's not taking blame off Tannehill. I mean, he had a terrible game. He had the worst game, arguably, of his career, and that's the biggest problem. But the outside factors, his lack of trust does seem somewhat apparent right now in this protection.
Jared from Spring Hill on the text line says, Vrabel overstepping his bounds by saying Henry will be more involved moving forward. Reminds me of when he said, as long as I'm the coach, AJ will be a Titan. That's from Jared from Spring Hill on the text line.
Well, when you say, as long as I'm the coach, AJ's a Titan, you're talking about the GM. You know, like that's right. Like that's overstepping, especially if the GM has final say on personnel.
Right.
Being the head coach of a football team, saying something is going to happen, how is that overstepping? You're the head coach of the freaking football team.
Yeah. If you want Derrick Henry to be more involved, guess what's going to happen?
Right.
He's going to be more involved.
The offensive coordinator works for you. The defensive coordinator works for you. Right? Now, yeah. Maybe you work for Craig Aukerman. I don't know. Maybe he's really running this whole thing.
I couldn't wait on Sunday after that first play of Amani Hooker coming in and making the fumble and recovering the ball to start things off. I couldn't wait to come in here and talk about what a good job Craig Aukerman did. 5 made field goals, and then they got that freaking punt blocked. And I was like, man.
That reminds me, though.
That's it.
Yeah, because Jared texted me. He's like, does that on Aukerman? I'm like, yes, Jared. That's fine. But does Jared give him a pretty good grade because Nick Folk was 5 for 5?
I don't know.
That's some damn good special teams coaching to me.
5 for 5 and didn't really even sweat one of them. As soon as it left his foot, you're like, yeah, that's going in. Way to go.
I mean, Jared, you know, dug through the film on his weak leg. So did Craig Aukerman find some leg strengthening techniques in a couple weeks of him being here? All of a sudden, boom. Thank you, Coach Aukerman. I don't know. Apparently the special teams coach is all powerful.
I guess so. Joe is Alyssa Milano graces our TV here in the studio.
Bless you.
Maddie on the text line says, Joe, you said Burks was open 3 times. Is one of those his really bad drop? I haven't seen the all 22 to see why he wasn't targeted, but he played 90% of the snaps and he seemed like he was invisible most times.
Yeah, look, he was covered well most of the day. Okay. That there's no doubt about that. But also that drop was bad. And I'd have to look back on the situation. I'll pull up my notes. That was a big drop.
It was.
It's just like you can't have it. I do think sometimes it's what is it? It's like the goalie who sees 2 shots and all of a sudden it's like, oh, how did that one get through? You need to get some work, man. You know, you need to get a little lather going. But
I would be
that was a big drop.
I would be really surprised if they don't try to find a way to get him involved early on this week against the Chargers. Like, you got to find a way to get him going. And look, maybe it's even taking a shot with him down the field. I don't know what that looks like, but gotta find a way to get him going early on because it was way too long before they even looked his way on Sunday. And maybe some of that's on him not getting open. I mean, obviously, got to get open better than he did on Sunday, but this offense is not going to be a good offense if he's not a heavy part of it. It's just not.
Yeah, I mean, compare like that performance – to expectations, one of the biggest things that we consistently talked about in camp is how good he looked. So, yeah, first target, it's 9-all. There's 9:25 left in the third. First target, and it's a nice contested catch, crossing route, 14 yards. Next play, screen to him, 4 yards. Next play, he's wide open. Again, a crosser that moves the chains, and it's just a drop. So then you get to 3rd and 6, and that's when that's actually that 3rd and 6 when it's 9-all is when the little twist and Skoronski let Granderson pass him for a sack.
Yep.
So there you go. You catch that pass, you avoid that play altogether, and you have another first down, right around midfield in a 9-all game.
Tune in to 102.5, 106.3, the game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Illinois versus Penn State. Presented by Superbook Sports and Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all the hottest non-conference games across the country. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. We'll look back at the Wake Forest game, look ahead to UNLV coming up this weekend for Vanderbilt as well. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Check out this week's Nashville's Best Deal. It's the legendary Elliston Place Soda Shop. Elliston Place Soda Shop is one part soda shop, one part meat and three. and one part Old School Diner that has been serving Nashville since 1939. Get half off a $20 gift card to Elliston Play Soda Shop now at thegamenashville.com while they last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keezer here with you on this Wednesday morning. We are scheduled to be joined by Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee shortly, so looking forward to that. You know, we've discussed Vanderbilt's loss to Wake Forest this weekend. The situation that I've thrown out there is still on the line. You have a chance this weekend to rebound, go on the road to UNLV. If you can grab that win, 3-1 in non-conference play before you host Kentucky next week at home to kick off SEC play. Not best-case scenario, but certainly not worst-case scenario either. And if you're Vanderbilt, 3-1, I still think if they can get that done, they have an opportunity once SEC play starts to have some interesting games, be that Kentucky, be it Florida, be it Missouri, be it Auburn. They've got some games on their schedule that I think could be really interesting here. The question that I really have is, like, defensively, how much improvement is there going to be as the season goes along? Because I thought even in the game Saturday, I know they only put up 20 points, and you got to find a way to put up more points than that, but the turnovers were really what killed them in that game. I thought the offense looked pretty good, and you could still see that, especially in the passing game, they have some weapons that are going to give SEC defenses some problems in Jade McGowan, in Will Shepard. A.J. Swan, when he's on, I think is a good player. He's got to take care of the football better than he has been. But UNLV coming up this weekend, Vanderbilt a 4.5 point favorite in that game on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah, look, and I think the one thing I thought was going to be really good with this team, but was struggled early, but I think is getting better is the offensive line. I think the offensive line is a pretty good offensive line, and it just didn't play great early. I think that's gotten better. The passing personnel, and they get it rolling, is really good, without question. I think the backs, you know, you're starting to see. You know, they don't have a Ray Davis from last year, but they've got good backs.
Yep.
The defense I thought would be better than it is, and it's, I mean, just haven't seen enough from that side of the ball, and that's disappointing. So we'll see where that goes. It can get better. It got better last year. I mean, it's like last year got way better, and then all of a sudden Tennessee came to town. You know, now that was just the matchup was terrible, but yep. Even with a quarterback not throwing the ball that well that day, there's just no stopping the run at all, which is, you know, it's tough with that offense. UNLV so far, they beat Bryant 44-14.
Sure.
And you talk about
poor Bryant.
Talk about a little bit of a switch in competition level. Then you go to Michigan. And actually, like, losing 35-7 isn't it's not the worst, you know. It's not the worst thing in the world. So now you kind of – I guess you kind of –
Michigan didn't have Harbaugh, you know.
That is true. They didn't have Harbaugh.
Did they hold up like a 3 this week?
Well, he's number 4.
I know.
Okay.
maybe they're just counting down the suspension.
Like, 2-4. Going down. That's true. Yeah, I see what you're doing.
Just get
to
the 1. One more. One more without it. Still the wildest thing. I've seen. Like, is he dead? What's going on out here?
Yeah. But I did like the fact that he said he cut his grass and he went to McDonald's at halftime of the game. I mean, you gotta respect that, you know.
That's right.
They're UNLV splitting the difference, I guess, with Vanderbilt, you know, coming in this week. Just it's interesting to me. You said Vanderbilt's 4.5 point favorite.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I think they're better, you know, than UNLV. They are on the road. It kind of feels a little bit like the Northern Illinois game from last year, which they were in big trouble, and then A.J. Swan
played great.
Went nuts. Yeah, so that's their key to victory, is that passing offense, I mean, that offense in general. I mean, they got to have some balance, but getting the ball out to those playmakers, and those guys can make plays on, I think, any secondary that they play this year.
Yeah, I mean, Will Shepard, the catch he made in the end zone on Saturday at Wake Forest where he's diving backwards, he lands in bounds. They went to review. I thought it should be upheld. Ultimately, it was upheld. It was a great play by Will Shepard. And that guy, he's going to be playing on Sundays. Like, he's a really good player. Jade McGowan's a good player, too. They got to find a way to hold on to the football. And you can't have the turnovers that you've seen from A.J. Swan in that Wake Forest game. Like, you're not going to be perfect, and they're going to have turnovers. He's going to throw picks as the year goes on here, but got to find a way to take care of the ball, especially like early in the game. Coming out immediately and then just turning it over immediately, It's not a great way to start on the road. And I realize they went into a delay after that, so it was basically like restarting the game after that. But got to take a little bit better care of the football if you're Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and the defense did get a stop in the low red zone.
They did.
So it was only 3-0. But still, like you're starting out in a hole, and then you're playing catch-up the rest of the day. And then you get to the point where now you got it rolling, you get a touchdown, you get a stop, and you have the fumble and the punt. You know, the terribly timed mistakes right now. Vanderbilt's got to clean that up big time.
There's not a ton of great games this weekend in college football. Like the week three slate, and I was looking at this yesterday, it's not great. I mean, you got Georgia and South Carolina in the SEC, and Georgia is a 27.5-point favorite in that game at home against the Gamecocks. I mean, Alabama goes on the road to South Florida, and I would imagine they're going to respond in a big way there. I mean, the games of the day, Tennessee and Florida at night on Saturday at 6 o'clock, and then after Tennessee, Florida, you've got Colorado, Colorado State, which a lot of people will be watching. But really, like the slate this weekend in college football, honestly kind of sucks. It's not very good.
Yeah, it's a bad week. It's kind of good if you're a Tennessee fan, because that game – is kind of forced into a center stage kind of thing. But next week is loaded.
It's pretty good.
On the college football schedule front. Yeah, this week is definitely underwhelming. An interesting one, frankly, is Washington at Michigan State.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see how the heck they respond up there. Harlan Barnett is the acting head coach, a guy I respect a ton.
So what do you make of the way all that Mel Tucker, the situation in Michigan State has gone down to this point?
Well, look, I mean, the thing is there's all this back and forth now, and there's a hearing and all this stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've read all the stuff, and like, obviously Brenda Tracy and Mel Tucker talked a lot. They had a friendship for sure. To me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, all that now is just about, like, it's him. He's trying to get some of this contract and get a settlement and all this stuff. When it comes to, and as far as, the, you know, the one thing people I think missed a lot on this is, like, Title IX investigations, if anything leaks out on that, that is a massive mistake. Title IX can, so, like, the Michigan State, they didn't know the details of the investigation until she leaked it to USA Today, which she did because she says someone gave her identity up to another reporter. So that's how it all came down. Like, it's not like Michigan State. It looked like Northwestern, right, where it's like, okay, you knew all this stuff, and then everybody freaks out, and then you act on it. Michigan State didn't have the details. If they do, the Title IX people have completely botched their job.
Yes.
You cannot do that as a Title IX investigator. That said, it's still obviously a terrible look for Michigan State. If you're Mel Tucker at that place with that history, and you're getting into something with Brenda Tracy, who is, you know, I mean, she's the leading advocate against sexual assault. She does really important work, but like, what could possibly possess you to be that stupid?
I don't know.
So, I mean, that's all it is to me. It's just terrible, terrible decision making by him. He's done. I mean, this is just, he's suspended right now, but he's done, and he should be done. And that's it. As far as all the stuff between them and the back and forth, I mean, I have no idea. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. You know?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I agree. He's done. And, you know, you talk about a fall from grace, like the contract that he signed coming into Michigan State, he gets the big deal. And then on the field, it starts to go the other way. And now you got this situation. I mean, that has gone the other way very quickly for Mel Tucker at Michigan State.
I mean, 2 years ago, they beat Michigan. We were there. They beat Michigan. They're number three in the country. People are talking about LSU coming after them. So Michigan State gives them the huge guaranteed, what, 10-year, 95?
Yeah.
The interesting thing about that is part of that is being paid by Matt Ishbia and another booster. You know, so
people in the NBA, like covering it, think it's a Shibia. What do you think of that?
A Shibia?
Yeah, remember all that stuff?
Oh, and, yeah, is that what they said?
Nobody, it's like, Matt Ishbia. Like, that's not how you say that, like, but cool.
Like, dude, yeah, do you see a vowel between the SH and the I? Like, what?
I don't know.
Come on, Matt Ishbia.
Anyway, so
Matt with one T, by the way. But anyway, part of the contract, I believe, like he has his own aspect of that contract that I think can just get taken away now. He's been asked about this and is not giving any comment, but, you know. The thing with Mel Tucker is incredibly stupid. Also, like, what he did here compared to what other coaches have done here who right. then go on and are fine. And have, like Mel Tucker will be somebody's D coordinator yep. at some point, and he'll be fine. And he'll get some of this money. But my God, it was – I mean, just – you. How can you be this dumb?
Coming next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We will do that next. Paul Koharski from paulkoharski.com joining us in studio from 8 to 9 o'clock. So looking forward to that. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well... Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant. Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Wake up! Wake up! Wake up! Wake up!
Hey, pull your pants up! Damn!
You can roll with that team. That's good enough to win a lot of football games.
Well, every day I look in the mirror, I don't think I'm getting any younger. Offensively, the name of the game is scoring points.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joe, we don't get enough Jeremy Pruitt on the show anymore, but with that in mind, I turn things over to you.
Very fitting that we get some Jeremy Pruitt because I believe the last time the Tennessee Volunteers football team had a players-only meeting was actually back-to-back years, actually, under Pruitt, as I look back. 2019, after that nice Georgia State loss. And then as they could get all jacked up to take on Zach Wilson and BYU in a big Saturday night game. Woo! And then in 2020, I don't even know when the heck that was, but they should have had players-only meeting every day. They should have done it out at fancy restaurants.
They should have.
Gotten in on some of that recruiting dinner money. But I'm a bit surprised to hear that the Vols had a players-only meeting after Saturday's win over who the heck did they play? Austin Peay. Sorry, the Govs.
Shout out to the Govs.
Fly is open. Let's go, Peay. The Govs. Hey, first of all, the Govs deserve some respect for how they played.
I agree.
You know, they got some. They found some seams. You know, with their run game. And hey, man, Tennessee was missing on some passes, but how, do you not ever credit the defense? Just like I didn't want to credit Chris Hubbard, you know, for Cam Jordan looking not great. Maybe it was Chris Hubbard. But the Vols have blown out two opponents. Now, 30-13 is...
Saturday was not a blowout.
Well...
I'm here to
that
tell
is
you.
Interesting.
It so, was not a blowout.
That what is the definition of a blowout? Like, just in terms of score margin?
They were favored to win Saturday's game by 48
points.
Oh,
no, I know.
And won by 17.
Right. They were... Right. No, of course. Relative to expectations. But what's just purely forget the line, forget the expectations. What's a blowout in score margin?
College football, it's so difficult
gotta
to answer
that
question.
Got to be in the 20s?
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on a lot of it's who you're playing, too. But, yeah. Saturday's game was not a blowout.
Yeah, right. Saturday's game was a massive disappointment, there's no doubt. They won 30-13. But you still win 30-13, and you're 2-0. And you're 79-26 in score differential in your season, you don't expect a players-only meeting to happen. So what does that mean? Because here's what I would say about the Vols. I'll say it again what I said earlier this week. Everything we've seen from the SEC so far, and I know this isn't their concern, they're worried about themselves, but everything we've seen so far, I feel better about Tennessee being undefeated when Georgia comes to Knoxville now. I feel better right now. You may disagree with me, but I feel better. They have – I watch Alabama, obviously. We all watch Alabama, Texas. And Alabama can get a lot better, and they got a lot of good players. And it's not like it's totally hopeless with Milroe, but I feel better about Tennessee's chances to win that game than I did before I watched Alabama play football at all, because I'm looking at Alabama thinking there's – I mean, they are going to be out for Tennessee, and they will be. They have major flaws. Not that Tennessee doesn't, but – go through the whole schedule. South Carolina, Texas A&M, they were supposed to be maybe problematic. I don't think they are. I don't think they're going to be. As long as Tennessee executes, and that's the thing, this players-only meeting should have been Joe Milton and his receivers playing catch for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Everybody else, you guys are good. Go home. Get some rest. Get your treatment. Get in the weight room. Whatever. Training table. Joe, receivers, go play catch for hours. Because that's what it is.
That's what it is.
Well, it's interesting to me. How many teams do you know that had players-only meetings? And I know there are examples. There's these famous meetings in championship seasons, but how many do you really know that have that, especially early, and then ended up being great?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, first off, I think the term players-only meeting gets really blown out of proportion a lot. Like, I think players-only meetings happen all the time. Like, I there's players-only meetings all the time. Was Saturday's – like, the Tennessee players have talked about it. They're like, yeah, we do this all the time. So I don't know how much different Saturday's really was than any of the other ones that they've done. I mean, I will say they've outscored – look, the score margin you brought up, what is it, 79-26 through two games? They played two god-awful football teams through two games. Virginia is terrible. Virginia got beat 36-35 by James Madison on Saturday.
Don't sleep on JMU. Solid program.
They are absolutely terrible. Austin Peay got beat by 26 by Southern Illinois the week before.
Salukis.
So, I don't
Corey
think,
Curtis, shout out.
I said this earlier this week, and I believe it. If Tennessee's offense plays the way they did Saturday against Austin Peay, they will lose on Saturday to Florida. So, look, it's not time for panic or anything like that. Like, it's not like this is some red flag disaster for Tennessee through two games. But there is a level of football that we have seen a lot of these guys play that they have not reached on the offensive side of the ball through two games. Now, you get, I think, Cooper Mays back this week at the offensive line. How much of a difference is that going to make in protection? How much of a difference is that going to make in the way they operate offensively? You would think that would help to bring in Cooper Mays back, especially going on the road in that environment. But the passing offense has looked, to me, watching them through two games, totally out of sorts. Now, the one question I have is, how much are all of us who watch these games still viewing this through the Hendon Hooker lens and how smoothly that offense was, and how much of that is them actually not playing well so far? I have not been impressed with the receivers through two games, and the reason that that's concerning is you have seen every one of those guys that we've talked about. I've seen them play much better than this. So that's the – to your point, the meeting part of it, it would be between Joe Milton and the receivers. They got to get it figured out.
But see, yeah, like with the receivers, the thing is, I think it's good if you know somebody can do play well, though, right? Like it's like Tannehill. Like I just can't imagine he's gonna, you know, lay an egg again like he did Sunday.
Right,
I mean, I've seen Brew McCoy and Squirrel White do enough. I know they're good.
Right, but you've played Virginia and Austin Peay.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Why are you having problems with Virginia and Austin Peay? Is the question?
Sure.
It's not that, you know, you've not seen them do it before. It's why are you struggling against two opponents that you have no business struggling against? And what's that going to mean when you start SEC play this weekend?
Yeah, you got to execute, no doubt. And that's the thing. Cause I don't. And Josh Heupel said it, and I know sometimes it's like coach speak, what's coach speak, what's real? But I mean, he was pretty adamant. Like, he liked the energy and all that stuff overall from the football team. Because that's a players only meeting. It sometimes is a lot like, okay, you guys got to focus. You guys got to play harder, whatever. I mean, everybody's going to have a little bit of a letdown factor with Austin Peay when you have Florida next, right? Like, there's some level. But I didn't think that they were like some, like, lifeless football team. They just played like crap. As far as your point on players-only meetings, yeah, I hear you. But they're still – and, yes, they're overblown. But, like, there's still a – I don't think it's constant where it's like, okay, coach is out. Let's all have this big conversation here, you know?
Yeah.
I mean – you know, like what was the Preds last year, which for a while was like, ooh, it really got them going, and then
I think like three games, and then
it was like, I don't know, is it time for another one?
Right.
You know, it's. I think there are definitely meetings like that that don't become public, but when they do, when someone decides to talk about it, it's like, okay, you sort of like circle it, like let's see what that means. What does that do for you?
To your point, like I'd love to know what they talked about in the meeting. Like defense, you guys have looked great through the first two games. Keep it up. Offense, try to complete a pass. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so Amari Thomas talked about it some yesterday, but Dave Hooker is the one who had this first, and according to what I saw from him, a lot of it was Milton taking the blame, which is good. I mean, that, you know, he's the leader of the team, and he hasn't played well.
No.
So, I mean, the accountability from him is good. But even with him, like, I have no doubt about his desire, his effort, his passion, all his leadership, all that stuff. But, like, you got to make good throws.
That's what it comes down
to. Like, Tannehill's a great leader and a great guy, too. But, like, my gosh, man, ultimately, your job is to make accurate throws.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Tennessee's offense through two games has been you've missed on throws. And when some of the throws he's made, you hadn't caught them. Like, that's what it's been through two games. Now, if you fix that, then I don't know if it's going to be like the offense was last year, but it's going to be a good offense. But I do think quality of opponent matters in this discussion. Like, they played two bad teams, and they are struggling to throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. I mean, their passing offense through 2 weeks has essentially been bubble screens. Like, that's what it is. Like, go watch the completions that they've had. I would guess 75% of them have been bubble screens.
Yeah. And now that also gets into then, okay, are they actually – didn't someone on the text line say, like – yeah, yesterday someone on the text line said they talked to
Chase McGrath,
and he said, I forget the texture, but he said 100%, they're only using 30% of their playbook. And I'm like, Sex Panther works, you know, 70% of the time, 100% or whatever. Yeah, yeah. But in all seriousness.
It was good to get Chase McGrath's alleged thoughts on that, though. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was good to know that the former kicker knows the percentage of playbook they're using. I'm sure there's some stuff they've held back.
I mean, I would hope so.
But, you know, another thing about that is, like, I mean, look, Joe Milton, the Orange Bowl is still there against a really good team. And, by the way, there was a long stretch of that where the offense wasn't clicking. But there is that on film where he made important throws over the middle of the field, deep, et cetera, against a really good defense.
Well, and there are, from that game, Brew McCoy, Squirrel White, and Ramel Keaton making plays down the field, which we've really not seen to this point.
I think they're going to put a number on Florida. That's just me.
Well, maybe they will. Maybe, and we're going to, if that happens, we'll come in on Monday and we'll credit the players-only meeting that took place.
Yeah, that's right. We can talk about it all year.
615-737-1025, our phone number. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com. We'll get into Titans talk with him for the next hour. So he's going to join us from 8 to 9 in studio. Looking forward to that next. This is Robbie and Rexrode, 1025-1063, The Game.